You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Over the course of his life, Manny Farber worked as a painter, a carpenter, a writer, and a teacher, but he's best remembered for his important contributions to the field of film criticism. This month, the Film Society of Lincoln Center is celebrating his life and work by presenting a selection of the films he found most thought-provoking. And joining me now are Kent Jones, the Associate Director of Programming at the Film Society of Lincoln Center, and author and film critic Philip Lopate, whose most recent novel, Two Marriages, was recently published by Other Press. I'm very pleased to welcome the two of you to the show. And welcome you back, in fact. Philip, Manny Farber was a serious painter. Did he also write about art, or did he limit his critical writings to films?
He wrote some about art, actually. And he had a lot of hobbies, like he was interested in prize fighting and various things. But really, I think of him as a major film critic and a kind of film critic's film critic. When I did my anthology, American Movie Critics, I listed him as one of my five top film critics. But I think a lot of film critics today read Manny Farber for the surprise of his sentences, for the fact that it really wanders from moment to moment, and you don't really know what he's not setting up a whole piece to make one point. You know, he keeps surprising you, he keeps getting at the mystery, and he keeps surprising himself. So to me, he's like a great essayist.
Well, how did he even wind up doing this? Because he set out to be a painter who supported himself through carpentry.
Well, he actually, I think he was friends with James Agee, who had already started writing film criticism, and he ended up taking over one of Agee's posts.
We took over Otis Ferguson's job.
Oh, that's
actually
right.
When he went away to the Merchant Marines. And,
well, Kent, in an article you wrote for Film Forum nearly 10 years ago, you said that even those who admire Manny Farber's work constantly attempt to reduce him to a comfortable soundbite. What is it about his criticism that was so challenging for readers?
I think that what Philip alluded to a moment ago, which is that when you read him, you read the sentences and you just don't know what direction he's going to go in. A lot of criticism is the opposite of that. It's devoted to the judgment. For him, the judgment was secondary. He actually said once, you know, I really don't care about critical judgment. For me, it's a derelict appendage. And that's why...
But isn't that what people read film criticism for?
Well, I don't think he was.
Should I see it? Is it a movie worthy of my time?
I don't think he wasn't a consumer guide the way a lot of other critics were. You know, another thing is that he mixed up genres a lot, so that he would look at the space in a film frame. He'd look at Chuck Jones cartoons. He'd look at B-movies, he'd look at art movies, and instead of creating a hierarchy, he kind of mixed them together.
Yeah, I think that's quite true, and that's part of his anti-judgment stance, because he was, you know, for him, those hierarchies just had no meaning whatsoever. And so, to a certain extent, I know what you mean, Lenny, but I think that a lot of the time when criticism is that good, it's something else. It's not just a consumer guide.
I just want to say the fact of the matter is...
Well, we expect our newspapers to be more like consumer guides.
Yes.
But if you're writing for a serious film journal, you have another kind of a luxury, don't you?
Well, he wasn't always writing for film journals. He was writing for...
Commentary. He was writing for the New Leader. He was writing
But not newspaper reviews that said it opened yesterday. And
I just want to say
he wrote
one
for
thing
Time.
About that.
I just want to say.
Yeah. I think that in spite of his statement about judgment, I think he was making judgments every sentence and every half sentence, but they were qualifications. He was qualifying things all the time, and he was undercutting his own judgments. In other words, what he didn't do was he didn't mass all his judgments toward one argument.
Yeah, that's quite true. I mean, he was always going back too, and he was looking at things again and again and again, and he would always change.
Another thing. Sorry to write over you, Lenny, but you know, younger brothers. And
it's
all
okay.
That.
It's your show.
Lopate.
Another thing was that he didn't hero worship. That is, he would write about a director, even a director he admired a lot, and he'd sort of approach everything as a moment by moment, so that there'd be weak scenes in an Anthony Mann director movie, even though he loved Anthony Mann, or he would say something critical about Orson Welles, who he also loved, you know.
But I do think that perhaps where he was judgmental towards a certain kind of movie that seemed very popular and won Academy Awards, and I don't always agree with him on that, you know.
Kent, you say that his work was more similar to new journalism in some ways.
Well, no, what I meant when I wrote that in the article back in 2000 was that it was a throwback during the days of the new journalism. In fact, it reminded me more of, let's say, a jazz solo.
And jazz was another one of his interests.
Yeah. Yes.
He'd also been a sports writer.
No, he wasn't. He wrote a little bit in high school, but he was influenced by sports writing. That was a big item for him. He reviewed art quite a bit. He actually even wrote some criticism of furniture, of all things. Very briefly.
He had been a carpenter.
Yeah. He made his living as a carpenter, but he really thought of himself as a painter. And Manny, in fact, did have these two very separate existences. I mean, at this point, he's almost, you know, when they ran the Oban in the New York Times, they didn't put a picture of him there. They put a reproduction of one of his paintings.
His paintings are important, and they have a real connection to his writing because, you know, one of his most famous pieces talks about termite art, which is a kind of art that he liked, as opposed to white elephant art, which was a kind of pompous, self-congratulatory art. And termite art tended to eat its way into a work. And when you look at Manny Farber's paintings, they kind of ramble all over the place. The eye keeps moving, not with a central image, you know.
Yeah. Again, no hierarchies.
And he claimed that whether it was a piece of film criticism or a painting, he was always striving to work against the white elephant style.
Yes.
And is that immediately apparent in the writing?
It's very apparent, and sometimes that's where I disagree with him because, like, this has to be seen in historical context. So, like, he was very hard on a movie like Roman Holiday, which I love, and I think that he was hard on someone like William Wyler, whose movies now look pretty good, you know?
In fact, that's not the case. He made Roman Holiday one of the 10 best films of the year. he would write different things at different times. I mean, one thing that he said to me once, he wrote a piece about James Agee, which is included in Negative Space.
Yes.
And incidentally, there's going to be a much larger collection of his work.
Negative Space being his best-known book.
Yes,
his only
book of film criticism. And there's going to be a much more comprehensive collection coming out pretty soon, edited by Robert Polito. But he wrote this piece about James Agee. They were very close friends. And the piece takes a very tough, hard, critical look at Agee, and he kind of regretted it when he was older, but he said to me, he said, you know, he didn't deserve that. But then, you know, he also said, I think that so much of criticism is involved with the time when you're writing it. People just have to understand that, and they have to know that at that time, everybody around me was worshiping Agee and treating him like a saint, and I just felt like I needed to reverse it.
It's almost an act of friendship that he wanted to desacralize Agee.
That's
you
right.
Know?
Yeah.
We're talking about Manny Farber. There's a series called Manny Farber Remembered that's at the Film Society of Lincoln Center at the Walter Reed Theater, and you can find a full schedule of all of the films being shown on our website at wnyc.org. Go to the LoPage Show page. My guests are Kent Jones, who's Associate Director of Programming at the Film Society of Lincoln Center, Philip LoPate, who's a film critic and an essayist, and whose latest work is two novellas called Two Marriages. You mentioned the book Negative Space, and Negative Space is an important concept for him,
right. For
painters as well.
Space is an important concept.
Very important, and I think he defines it very carefully in Negative Space by saying that there are different kinds of space. There's the physical space. There's the psychological space created by the actor, and then there's also the sense of experience imparted by the director, which is a more abstract concept, but he outlines it very well by giving, as an example, the battle scene in Alexander Nevsky, where you're just getting a few glimpses of riders on horses on the ice and their breath, but you have a sense of vastness that isn't really there.
And in fact, when he talks about actors, he talks about the way that he compares the way Katharine Hepburn sort of ambles through a composition and bringing up Baby, and the way that Jane Fonda, with a kind of tight self-loathing, stays in one space and they shoot horses, don't they?
Yeah.
He's getting at something which is not so much moral as the way that people hold themselves, the way that sets a shot. You know, he's getting at something that is really very visual. You know, the kind of mood and set of a moment in time.
Experiential.
Do we see his influence on other film critics who followed?
Totally. You look at someone like Jim Hoberman or my friend Kent Jones, who's sitting here. I think that
Jonathan Rosenbaum.
I think there's a whole generation of film critics. Certainly, when I write film criticism, I think about his going against the grain of the big idea and just trying to capture a fleeting moment. You know,
I think that the influence is less stylistic, because trying to, you know, copy Manny's style is a losing proposition. I mean, you know, but two, it's intellectual. Because of the way that he thought, the way that nothing was conclusive, the way that everything was always in motion.
And well, he collaborated with his wife,
yes,
Patricia
does.
Patterson. How much of a collaboration was that?
That really was.
That was a total collaboration.
It's funny that
life and in art, and they were both painting side by side. Patricia's a great painter herself.
It's funny that this most idiosyncratic of film critics also collaborated more with people.
He loved to collaborate. I mean, he wrote an excellent piece on Preston Sturges that's in Negative Space with his friend Willie Poster. And, you know, later when he was teaching at the University of Southern California, yet another career that he had that took up a lot of his life, and to which this series is really linked, because Patricia and I thought of films that he taught more than, you know, just the films that he wrote about. He referred once to Jean-Pierre Garin, who's his good friend and a friend of mine and yours, as a twin brain.
A twin brain. Well, one of the things he did was he watched films over and over again. It was the opposite of Pauline Kael saying she only watched a film once. He would watch it over and over again. He would change the reels when he was projecting it. He would just show one reel. Again, this was an attempt to get into a moment and just to break that hypnotic trance.
Yep. You know? One of the most famous reviews he wrote with his wife was of Taxi Driver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why was that so groundbreaking?
I think because that particular review evokes that film so well, so accurately, and yet when and as Philip says, there is a lot of judgment in his writing without Patricia, and I think that in that piece there's a lot of judgment, there's positive and negative, and yet when you come away from the piece, you don't think of the judgments, you think of the startling picture that is evoked of the film.
Well, you used to work for Martin Scorsese.
I still do work with Martin Scorsese.
Well, would he have read that review and been pleased?
I don't think that Marty or Paul Schrader, who were both — Paul was actually a very good friend of Manny's, and Marty knew Manny and was one of the few critics who he really whose work he really loved and looked up to. I doubt that either of them ever read the piece, just because based on general principles, they don't really read pieces about their work.
But I think that one of the things that's fascinating about that piece, and I really do like that piece, is how he looks at De Niro as a kind of movie star, and how the movie star part of De Niro is working against the Travis Bickle part.
Yes.
And in a way, the essay is about how the movie's trying to have its cake and eat it too.
Yes.
And I think that in that sense, Manny is a moralist. But I just want to say a word about the series. It's such a kind of perverse and interesting thing that you've done by programming this particular set of movies, which are wonderful movies, not the instant ones that you might think in connection to Manny Farm.
Well, I mean, again, you know, Patricia and I talked a lot, and we both felt that it was very important to reflect his sensibility and reflect the movies that he really, really went into a lot. So, for instance, if you just look at Negative Space, you would never know that how much Voyage to Italy by Rossellini meant to him. Mm-hmm. You would never know how much, you know, there's a piece on Val Lewton, but you would never know how much Jacques Tourneur meant to him.
High and low, and yet at the same time, these are all great artists.
Yeah,
that was his ability to see the art in something that was considered high art or something that was just considered a piece of commercial filmmaking.
He's got there are several Raoul Walsh films. He loved Raoul Walsh, and then there's Michael Snow's Wavelength, which is an experimental classic.
And Not Reconciled by Jean-Marie Straub and Daniel Huillet, and he loved their films in the same way that he loved films of the early 30s from Warner Brothers.
I think one thing he loved in a way was things not being settled, things that always had a little bit more mystery and irresolution. So Not Reconciled is a good title for Manny Farmer.
People will get a chance to have, again, an insight into what he thought about films by seeing these films. Are there going to be lectures as well?
No, we're making it really just about the films. I mean, you know, that's what he would have wanted. He was a very, it's impossible if you knew him not to think of his spirit, and he probably would have been horrified by the very idea of a tribute to begin with. But I mean, you know, I think that just to make it about the movie watching experience is something that he would have pleased him.
Well, he was a professor at the University of California, San Diego, but he has been called non-academic. Yes. So
there was a little bit of a tough guy in Manny Farber, the carpenter. The, you know, when he writes about Humphrey Bogart, when he writes about these Raoul Walsh movies with Jimmy Cagney, I always experienced him in real life as having some of that kind of a reticence of Bogart looking at somebody and appraising him and saying, oh, who is this mug and what does he know?
A reminder that we have the full Lincoln Center schedule posted on our show page at WNYC.org. And my great thanks to my two guests, Kent Jones, Associate Director of Programming at the Film Society of Lincoln Center, and Philip Lopate, film critic, essayist, and writer of fiction as well. His latest book, Two Marriages. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Lovely
Thank you
to
very
talk
much,
to
Lenny.